Accession number 9081, rule number 1.
Mr. Barthorpe, reel 1. Now, you joined the Sherwood Foresters, 8th Battalion, TA, in April 1937.
April 1937, 29th of April, yes.
Why did you decide to do that?
Why? Well, for one reason, my father was in the 8th Battalion Sherwood Foresters, 1914-18 war. My pal I worked with was in the band in the Sherwood Foresters. And he said, why not join us? So I went to the drill hall at Newark. I was 16 and a half. So he said, the RSM said, well, you will have to join either the band or the drums until you're 17, and then come into the infantry. But I carried on as I were. I did my infantry training and went with the band also, you know, carried on. And then we went to my first camp. I went with the TA was Beverley in Yorkshire, 2 weeks, 1937. 1938, we went to Lancaster near Morecambe Bay. 1939, we went to Anglesey, Holyhead. And our last parade, the Brigadier's inspection, he said, don't be surprised, lads, if you're not back here in 5 weeks. 5 weeks war started, but we didn't go to Wales. We stayed in Newark for probably 2 weeks. Then we went to Shildon in County Durham, you know, where the Stockton Railway is. We went to Shildon. From Shildon, I went with Captain Beckwith. Drummers in wartime are ACAC, bandsmen and stretcher bearers. So at Shildon, we was mounting our brain gun on the slag heap to the pit, Shildon. This was happening every day, first thing in the morning till 9 at night. When he came back, it was nearly too late to have a drink. It was too late to go to pictures. So one day the drum major said, Captain Beckwith's going to division headquarters. He's asked me if I can recommend him a batman. So he said, I'll put your name forward. If you're interested, company office at 1 o'clock. So I go to the company office and he said, are you interested? And I said, yes, sir. So he said, okay, in the morning, 1,500-weight truck, my gear, we'll go to Beedale. You've heard of Beedale Hunt, haven't you, in Yorkshire? Beedale, North Yorkshire. We stayed there 5 months in Beedale. He was sports officer beside his normal duties, and they was borrowing a PT instructor from Royal Corps of Signals because they didn't have one. And my second day there, we went on parade on the green outside the hall, and there was after picking out someone to take over so as not to keep borrowing from Royal Corps of Signals. I got picked out. In peacetime, I was a PT fanatic, boxing, wrestling, weightlifting, what have you. And they picked me out. I was with the Royal Corps of Signals instructor for about 3 or 4 lessons, and then I took over. And I was PT instructor at Division HQ for 5 months.
What sort of PT did you do with them? What was its purpose and how did you
do it? We did half an hour vigorous exercises, you know.
What?
Normal exercises.
Describe them.
Just normal PT.
What sort of thing would you do for vigorous exercises?
Arm and leg exercise.
And things like press ups and.
All that kind of thing,
sit
yeah.
Sit up, squat thrust.
Yeah. And. You know, the normal
star jumps.
Yes, kind of thing.
And this was every morning, was it? The first
that was
thing?
Every morning, yeah. And then one day we went on a cross country on about 7 to 8 miles. We just going to pick a route out and then go on a cross country run once a week. And Captain Beckwith used to run with us. I used to run with him. And he was 6'4", so you can tell my. I was doing 3 strides, didn't one.
What was the general state of fitness in the division when you were instructing?
There was quite fit. But you see, at Division HQ, it was nearly all office staff. There was no infantry at Division HQ. There were just officers, batmans, and mess orderlies and what have you. It was just the officers' headquarters, more or less. Like, you know, there were no...
So I had sedentary jobs.
So the only men that was on PT were staff. They're a sergeant's mess there and an officer's mess. Well, the sergeant's mess staff used to turn out on PT. Ours officers' batmen, those other officers' batmen, we all joined in this parade. There was no infantry group separate, you know. It was just division headquarters and staff.
But they were fairly fit.
Oh, yes, fairly fit, yeah.
What about the state of fitness in the battalion? What was that like?
I would say it was very good, because all living in the country, you know, miners and what have you, bricklayers, you had to be fit to be in the building trade.
So they're all physical chaps, were they?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. There was nothing wrong as regard fitness.
You mentioned joining up 37 partly because your father had been in the battalion during the First World War.
Yes, yeah.
When did you first think that there might be a war?
Well, I would say from about 36 onwards it was looking that way. You know, things you read in the paper, and then when Hitler took over the Maginot Line, the Rhine, they took over the Rhine in 1936. And then, you know, little bits you read between the lines in the papers, what was happening in Germany. And that was my first time I thought, you know, there was something in the wind, you know.
So it's that Rhine occupation that set you off, was it?
Yes, when Germany first took over the Rhine, yeah.
Did the actual outbreak of war come as a surprise to you?
Oh, no.
You were ready for it?
Yes, yeah. No, I thought it was unavoidable. I mean, Chamberlain went to Germany, but I mean, it was just a farce, I think. I think he was delaying while we got some armaments ready, because I don't think we'd get a damn thing, had we? With little nothing. I mean, in France, there was 60 obsolete aeroplanes in France.
What?
When we started this war, they thought they were going to carry on from 1914-18. They just weren't ready. Not in any way, were they?
Did you have any ideas about how the war might be fought, about what sort of tactics might be employed?
Not at the time. I did think tanks might take a major part, but how? I hadn't come to any conclusions.
Just a vague idea.
But I did think tanks were going to be one of the major forces in this last war.
What about the other chaps in your platoon and company? Did they share your views of the likelihood of a war and its likely character?
I don't think anyone was bothered. They had a job to do, and I think they just went to take what come. But we were all disappointed. Well, I say we were all. I think there were quite a few of us who were disappointed. We went to Norway to fight a war. Our regiments have got proud records, and we knew once we landed in Norway we'd lost all our supplies. We were going to be pitched into something that with no chance of making much impression. We were going to lose our regimental record, and that's something that struck me. I wanted our regiment to go to Norway and come back a proud regiment. They never got that opportunity. Our government didn't give them that opportunity. We went to Norway. Our transport was bombed. So when we landed, we hadn't a lorry. With no artillery, there were two Bofa guns that we had lashed to the ship going across. And they were lashed to the ship's side so that we could use them for ACAC if necessary. We landed, when we got going down the Mold Fjord to Andalsnes Ness, a spotter plane came over, and I should imagine, you know, it was only just wrecking. He saw the ship, it fired 2 4.7s and off he went, but he'd seen two, and probably at his heart he'd probably see the other two going to mould. The other two crews are going to Malta. He goes back with the information. Next morning, they bombed Handel's Ness, and two bow for gun got blew up. So they never got. It was never in use. So when we did actually go in action, we'd only 3-inch mortars and smoke bombs. What use were they? With the boys' anti-tank 505, which bounced off at tanks. Rubbish again. And we'd got a Bren gun, and that was the only two weapons we'd got. The Bren gun, rifle, anti-tank 505, boys' anti-tank.
When did you get the Bren
gun? And we were supposed to make some impression on the German. He'd got tanks here, he'd got artillery, he'd got trench mortars. We had, but they were no damn good.
When did you first get the Bren guns?
When we first got called up. See, what we used to do, we got called up 2 weeks before the war started. Territorials was called in. We stayed at the drill hall, but lived in civvy billets around the drill hall in case we were called up quickly. Drummers, automatically ACAC, bandsman stretcher bearers. So what we did, we used to go on the roof of the drill hall and see how quick we could mount, dismount Bren gun, you know, mount it for ACAC and dismantle. And that's what we were doing in the drums. We was continually mounting and dismounting, you know, the tripod for ACAC or whatever, or for ground fire.
What did you think of the Bren as a weapon?
I think it was very good. And you could very nearly get it down to a single shot. And it was pretty accurate. On target practice, I did quite well with the Bren gun. I could range... I never missed a target. At 600 yards, we had to wear a gas mask, run, drop down and fire at a target. I don't know how big it would be. Would it be 6 foot square, probably? 600 yards. I had all my bullets on the target. And that was being winded, running with a gas mask, laying down and firing, you know, 100 yards or whatever, drop down, fire.
Was that a fairly regular battle fitness test, that run and shoot?
Well, I think it was trying to get used to the gas mask. Because, you know, even though you got anti-dim, you used to steam up. And myself, I was better without. I couldn't get my breath quick enough when I was running. I used to steam the glasses up, and even with the anti-dim, you know, it didn't do too good a job. It didn't. So I was glad, really, I didn't. You know, we didn't have to use a gas mask in Norway.
What was the general state of the company you were in, your battalion, in 1940 in the spring? Just before you went to Norway?
In what way? I was at Division HQ. I came back to the regiment. I was only back a fortnight, and then we went to Norway. So I didn't get much time, and I was batman to Colonel Beckwith. I wasn't with the infantry.
What did you have to do as batman? What did your duties involve?
Kit. You know, he wore... the high boots, you know what they used to wear in them days.
The riding boots.
The riding boots, yeah. And all his equipment, Sam Brown, what have you.
So it's just looking after his kit.
Just looking after kit and any other things he wanted. Doing press suit. If he were going out, he wanted suit pressing, could have pressed suit. Okay, I'll press a suit, you know. Personal hygiene and kit. That's all it involved, really.
When did you first hear you were going to Norway?
We went to Rosyth, on I believe 7th of April, to Rosyth. We were put aboard the Glasgow. And from the Glasgow, we went disembarking on the Orion, which was 12 miles outside the boom nets. In the field, in the fourth, and then we came back onto the Glasgow, and we were supposed to be going off probably the next morning. The news came that the Germans fleet was entering the Norwegian fjords. So the ships, the Glasgow dropped us, and the Devonshire, the Leicester's on the Devonshire, they dropped us. They went out to meet the German fleet without us because they didn't want to lose too many men before, you know, before they could get to shore. So they dropped us off. We went in camp in Dunfermline for 5 days. We got letter cards. We could ride home, but everything was censored. We weren't allowed to put any war news in, say where we were. But there was whispers going around we were going to Scandinavia. And I thought at the time, well, there's only one thing for it, like, you know, and that's Norway. Anyway, the ships came back. I was aboard Galatea. Leicester's on Curacao. And we set off. The ships were doing a zigzag course because there were submarines out there in the Skagerrak, and the Germans was patrolling the fjords. So the ship was zigzagging all the way, which made it roll. Consequently, everybody's seasick. Me too. And I've never felt so terrible in my life. And I was okay until midday. I was on the deck till midday. I felt as fit as a fiddle. I went down the gangway for dinner, and that was it.
The smell of the food.
I was sick. Smell of the food, and I was straight to the toilets. And I came back, and I was laid on a bench on the mess deck. And so I got something to fetch up. I was reaching, and nothing there. So I had something to fetch up. I was going down to the canteen and buying a Jaffa, eating a Jaffa. But as soon as I got back, it was gone. And I was doing this for about 36 hours. But the whole ship was seasick. Then when we got to calmer waters entering the fjord near Mold, I had my tea. We landed at 10 o'clock that night. I had my tea as we entered the fjord. It got calmer. They cut the zigzagging out, and I was as fit as a fiddle. As though nothing had happened. Didn't affect me, and yet I was reaching and being sick all up for 36 hours, and as soon as I had a meal, entering the fjord, I was fit.
What sort of meal did they give you?
Can't really remember. they were good meals. But what we did have now, I couldn't really say.
Did you get any sort of impression of the Navy while you were on this voyage?
I thought it was a good life. And I wouldn't have minded being a sailor. In fact, that was my first thought, joining the Navy. But, yes, it's a great life in the Navy.
What impression did you get of Norway when you first approached it up the fjord?
Well, we left the Curacao at Mold, and the fjord narrowed. It was getting dark. I would say we entered the narrow part about 8 o'clock. It was a moonlight night. The water was just like glass. It was terrific. It was beautiful. You got the moonlight, the snow on the mountains. You got the reflections of the mountains in the water. And it just looked as though for the last 2 hours we were just gliding on a sheet of glass. It was fantastic. And I was hoping that night that... We were told that we'd probably have to fight away on land, not the Germans, the Norwegians. They thought the Norwegians would object to us landing. Because originally they didn't want us, did they? And we were told to be ready because they thought we'd to fight away on land, but against the Norwegians, not the Germans.
Who told you that?
It was the ship's officers.
It wasn't your own officers?
Pardon?
It wasn't your own officers?
No, the ship's officers. Or probably they got messages from home, like, you know. The civilians, I think they were a little bit hostile at the time.
Did they... Did you have any...
First of all, we were going to try and stop the oil supplies, weren't we, to Germany? From Sweden. So they had to go through Norway to get to Sweden. And the Norwegians didn't want us because they knew then it would involve Germany, and they didn't want Germany on Norwegian soil. And I think that's what led up to them being a bit hostile towards us, but there was none of that when we got there. But we were told to expect to fight away on land against the Norwegians and not Germans. But when we got to Andal's Ness, we got there 10 o'clock at night, and the snow on the mountains and the moon, and it was a fantastic view, and I was just hoping, just for that one night, there would be no trouble, because after what I'd seen, it would have spoiled a beautiful night. And all we saw was this spotted plane, which went back, and they came back in the morning. But when we got to Andal's Ness, so many men was unloading stores. The other half of us, we went to sleep in the school. Sleep on the floor or wherever you could. I tell you, on a desk, and it was damn hard. It was uncomfortable. I didn't sleep properly.
You must have been rather tired, though, having been seasick for so long.
No, not really. No, not at the time, no, because, as I say, I was a PT fanatic, and my tiredness soon went. I was near perfect fit myself, because I've been PT for about 5 years then, you know, running every night, and I used to run every night at week, Saturday, Sunday, it didn't matter, 5 miles, and I was as near perfect. I might be out of breath for, say, 10 minutes. After that, I was in perfect condition. So to me, it didn't bother me. Some of them, it might have done, but me, no.
When you were told that you might have to fight your way ashore and you might encounter some hostility,
mm-hmm.
Was there a formal briefing session at which you were called together and told this? Or
No. Just filtered down, just told casually. No, it just came out casually. Be prepared. But anyway, when we did land at the jetty, there was a host of Norwegians there. Welcome to Norway, that's what we got. Welcome to Norway, everybody was wanting to be with us, you know. It was the opposite to what we expected.
Who actually took you to the school?
The Marines. There were some Marines landed from the HUD. And these Marines apparently had taken a... There was some paratroopers landed, and they went into a hut. The remnants went in this here hut. And they hoisted a white flag of surrender. And the Marine went to the hut to take the surrender. The chap that stood in the doorway with the white flag had a bloke with a Bren gun, with a machine gun, between his legs. And they shot the sailor, the Marine, going down to take the surrender. So they just blew it to pieces with the fetch officer off the ship. Blew the hut with the lot in, you know. Because treachery. That's all they deserved. And the Marines was, there were some Marines on the quayside, and they took us to our billets, the school where we slept for the night.
Did you have any food before going to sleep?
No, we had some McConaughey's in the morning, the tinned army rations, before we set off. And we boarded a train for Dumbos. That was going to be our first stop, Dumbos. And then we were going to Stavanger Aerodrome, but the plans changed that many times, you just didn't know where they were. Anyway, we boarded the trains, open cattle wagons for Dumbos. We'd got Bren guns in the doorway, you know, as we went down the line, and told to expect trouble because when we got nearer to Dumbos, they had these 74 paratroopers dropped at Dumbos. We stopped in Dumbos station and we were going to help the Norwegians to clear these up, but in fact a lot broke the legs on the mountainside dropping, and the job was completed by the time we got to Dumbos. So
what was the train ride?
Pardon?
What was the scenery like on the train ride down to Donbass?
Oh, it's fantastic, the mountains. See, on the railway in Norway as well, the pine forests come close to the railway. You've only got like a footpath either side of the railway, and there's only, you know, this forest both sides, you've just got a footpath and a single track. And the trains, with it being hilly, the trains only do about 30 mile an hour anyway. The ganger as like a push bike in a sidecar with a little box on. When the train sees him, the train stops, he takes his bike off the line, and then when the train's gone, he puts it back on again. And they've got three wheels, just like, they've got flanges like a railway wagon wheel, and they just pedal down the line like pedalling a three-wheel push bike. Two wheels on one line, one on the other, and this little box, a hammer and three or four wedges, if necessary. But the trains are only slow, they're only about 30 miles an hour. They stop the train and take the bike off, put it back.
Was the whole battalion on the train?
Oh, no. There's only about two companies, I think, of us on the train.
And were you still with Captain Beckwith as Batman at that time?
No. What happened, when we got to Scotland, we had regulars intermingle with us. There was regular soldiers that probably done 8 years in India, you know, in the mountains in India. So when we got to Scotland, I mean, I had no argument with Beckwith, he had no argument with me. He thought it would be better with an experienced man, a more experienced. I was territorial, and he thought a regular army, a man that had done about 8 years and been to India, would have more experience, would be more help to him than I would. So it was just a matter of, he thought it was the best thing for him entering a campaign to have somebody that, because the chap that took over from me, he'd been in Hill fighting in Afghanistan, Northwest Frontier. And that's why he took an experienced soldier in place of me, and I quite agreed. It was better for him to have someone, you know.
So you were then back in a platoon, were you?
So I went back into A Company, yes.
Who was your platoon commander?
Oh, dear. You've got me there.
Do you remember who the company commander was?
Pardon?
Do you remember who the company commander was?
Yes, Platoon Sergeant Major Rouse. It was Sergeant Rouse, but he was acting PSM, Platoon Sergeant Major, and he was in charge of us. when we went into line at Tretton, Sergeant Rouse, PSM Rouse, acting, was in charge of us. We had no officer then.
So he was the platoon commander?
He was a platoon commander then at that stage, yeah.
Were you short of officers as a whole?
I don't think we were actually short, but they were split up in so many groups. What's happening, see, from Dumbos, we carried on down the line. We went to Biri. From Biri, we boarded lorries. We were on open lorries, travelling all night from Biri. We went down to Nykirk. And we got to Nykirk. One lorry was bombed at Biri. There were five men killed in Biri. Going over a bridge, it was trench mortared, and we lost five men.